Dee, have you ever had a houseplant throw itself on the floor just to get your attention?
I've had a kitten throw a houseplant on the floor to get my attention, but do tell.
So I walked into my sunroom the other day, and there on the floor is an aloe plant that's been growing in a 4-inch pot. And I knew it was getting too big for the pot and that I should replant it or repot it. But I guess I didn't get to it before it screamed for attention.
As long as you get, good thing that aloes are, you know, resilient.
They are resilient. And I have repotted it, and I have a little chunk that I put in a pot for my sister for her sunroom. And the others are now in a very long pot that's very stable, and there is no way they can throw themselves onto the floor again. Oh, and with that, let's get started. Welcome to The Garden Angelus, where we talk about flowers, veggies, and all the best dirt. I'm Carol Michael from Indianapolis, Indiana, where I have a suburban garden measured in square feet. It's about a third of an acre.
And I'm Dinesh from Guthrie, Oklahoma, where I garden on about, I own 7.5 acres, but I garden on 1.5 acres out in the country.
We call ourselves Garden Angelus because we are evangelists for gardening. We love gardening, and we want others to love it too.
Yes, we do. And we aren't afraid to spill the beans and tell all of our gardening secrets, the good, the bad, and even the ugly. But that's enough of who, what, when, where. Let's move on to this week's episode, which I'm really excited about. Hello, Carol.
Hello, Dee. Only we could be excited about a topic like this.
But really, I mean, it is exciting. First, tell me about your garden, because I know you are starting to order a bunch of seeds.
Well, I have ordered a bunch of seeds, and so I had the big idea that outside this window where I'm at, it's south facing, it's in front, and it's like brutal baking heat in the summer. So I decided, why not try all different sizes of yellow zinnias? So the only place I could find where you could buy just yellow zinnias, because most of them are mixed, was True Leaf Market. And so I bought tall, medium, shorter, and shortest, I guess. So those arrived. They're on my spreadsheet, which, by the way, one of our listeners wanted to know how I did the spreadsheet. So stop making fun. I sent it to her.
Damn. I know. I thought that was really cute that she wanted it. I'm not making fun. I made my own version of it when I drew that plan.
There you go. The other thing is, I have a new experiment going with microgreens. So again, I'm on the True Leaf Market website, and they have these microgreen growing pads, and they're like a thick, thick piece of paper made out of some sort of wood pulp or something. And you put them in the bottom of the 5-inch thing.
Right.
They expand and kind of fill up, not very deep. And then you just sow the seeds on top, and then you just keep them wet and they should sprout. Should be cleaner.
I was going to say that'd be really clean, and you wouldn't have to waste your potting soil. And potting soil is expensive. So, yeah.
Yeah. These were not cheap. I got 96 of them. I can't remember. We'll put a link to them because True Leaf Market, because I love it so much, is now a new affiliate. We will link to these supplies. But anyway, and then yesterday it was so nice. I went out and cleaned up the hellebores. Bring on the Lenten flowers.
Yeah, mine are almost all cleaned up. I've got a few more I saw in the front yard that I need to cut back. But the good news is it got so cold in Oklahoma those two times that the hellebore foliage just went to brown. So you don't have that problem of trying to sneak around and not cut your new foliage while your old foliage is still existing. I guess you don't have that problem. You're looking at me like, what are you talking about?
Well, because it always gets cold enough for the foliage to more or less die back. The secret is to get out there early, because that old dead foliage is not protecting those buds or anything. They don't need protection. Get out there before things really get going.
But in Oklahoma, normally we don't have all that dead foliage. The foliage stays alive all year. So you get out there and you just have ugly spotted foliage, and you start to cut it back. And then you go, oh, crud, I cut back a new leaf, because it's really easy to do. So this year, Oklahomans, you don't have that problem. It got so doggone cold that, yeah, it's okay.
Yes, it is okay. And then, you know, our friend in Iowa, Deb, she told me once that she actually cuts back her hellebores in the fall before anything is regrowing. And so that might be a solution for you in Oklahoma. She's in Iowa, though.
if I ever cut anything back in the fall. Okay. So, you want to hear about my gardening this week?
I do.
I cut back all of my pelargoniums in the greenhouse. I went out there one afternoon because it was beautiful outside. And I just opened the door to the greenhouse, got some ventilation in there, and just had the best day. And I put some information on my Instagram stories, which may be done by now, but I also did a little reel this morning. So if people want to go look at it, I sprayed for mealybugs, and people are going to ask me what I sprayed. I sprayed a mixture of soap and sulfur because it's what I had. I had a 3-in-1 spray.
That sounds nice. It smells delicious.
It actually didn't smell too bad, which surprised me. I also did, I threw some plants away that had, you know, mealybugs, and I thought, I don't even care about you. Goodbye. And then I found scale.
That's horrible. Ugh,
I hate scale. It's the most disgusting thing ever. So I went on the Big A and I ordered some horticultural oil to get it off, basically neem oil. And yeah, I mean, I'm twitching just thinking about it because I think scale is the grossest thing ever. And it always gets on the citrus trees this time of year in the greenhouse. I've never not had it happen.
That is interesting.
It's disgusting. Yeah,
the oil basically suffocates the little boogers.
And then you still have to kind of scrape them off.
That's disgusting.
It's so
people are going to be turning off the podcast if we don't move along very quickly to something more interesting, less gross.
Okay. I also wrote a blog post about the new year and new garden plans, and I drew a garden plan. I know you're surprised because
I'm not
the most organized person in the world, but I did. And it actually is a really good one. And you looked at it on the podcast, I mean, on the blog, didn't you?
I did. And I'm going to link to it. Tons of great information. And we might be talking about it more next week. I got some ideas. So Okay. Let me do a quote, take us into our flower topic. Winter is the time for comfort, for good food and warmth, for the touch of a friendly hand, and for talk beside the fire. It is time for home. Edith Sitwell.
I like that her name is Sitwell.
I know. That's the first thing. I'm like, Sitwell by the fire.
There you go. So our flower topic this week is cleaning up the flower garden, because this time of year, there's a lot of stuff on the internet about cleaning up your flower garden if you didn't do it in the fall, which we don't really advise you to do it the whole thing in the fall. Anyway, go ahead. What are we going to say about this topic? There's so much to say.
There is a lot to say. And I like what you wrote here, that you should start cleaning up about the time you see bugs starting to fly. And that's interesting, because the other day I was out on the porch and I saw this big horsefly flying around. I'm like,
what?
It was kind of early. How did you live through the winter? And I hope you die next week when it gets into the teens. But anyway, you know, like I've posted twice on Instagram, my crocuses in the back lawn are starting to bloom.
Right.
I was out there yesterday, but I didn't take the time to see if there's any bees coming out, because a lot of times on a nice day, yesterday was in the upper 40s, I think. And for our California listeners, I know the very thought of being outside in the upper 40s and saying, what a nice day, you have no idea. But anyway, I need to check to see if there are bees. But anyway, I thought that was a really good way to time it when you see bugs starting to fly.
Well, it's not my idea. It's actually the idea of, you know, whichever group originally talked about this. And it's because bugs overwinter in the stems of perennial gardens. And these are bugs that you want. I mean, I'm sure some bad bugs do too, but you want bugs in your garden, because bugs in your garden, it's part of an ecosystem and it creates more birds. If you have more bugs, you have more birds. So part of the idea is that you leave those stems upstanding, and then that way, when you cut them back, all the bugs have left. Now, my garden's 1.5 acres, so I can't do that everywhere. For one thing, no. I have to plant bulbs in the fall. And I think we talked about this earlier. So I try to group all of my bulbs, for the most part, where I can see them. And when I do that, then I only clean up that part in November enough to get my to get my bulbs in. And we talked about that a couple of weeks ago. So I did that in my kitchen border, and my front little area that I did all the great daffodil project, it was already kind of cleaned up. So I did that. And then you might want to cut back some of your old foliage in the spring as the bulb foliage comes up, because it, you know, it just depends on what look you want. So it all depends.
It all depends. And I was going to say, we should give a shout out to Jacqueline Vanderkloot from the Netherlands, who we heard her speak in, what city did she come to that we heard
she
her
came
speak?
To Buffalo. She came Buffalo. To Buffalo for GardenCon.
Charming, charming person. And her method is to mix up all your fall bulbs and then throw them out in the garden and plant them where they land for a natural look. Which my little sister didn't believe that. Littlest sister. I had her do that, and she was all amazed how beautiful her flowers looked last spring. But anyway, you have to cut back stuff, because if you do that and the garden is full of all kinds of standing brown debris,
you can't see them.
You can't find your bulbs. And then in the spring, you will be mighty disappointed that you missed them.
You will. So cleaning up your garden is a little bit like the Leaving the Leaves campaign. It's not a one size fits all solution. And you have, you know, there's nothing wrong with leaving some of it up and cutting some of it back if you need to. And that includes hellebores, which is one of the things we already talked about. It does make cleanup in the spring less of a chore if you start early. Now, if you have a small suburban lot, you can wait if you want to, as long as you don't have bulbs in the spot. It's just, I start mine out by the street, and then I clean that up first, and then I go over and clean up the, I should write a post about this, about turning it into kind of like rooms. Like, do you remember flylady.net?
I am familiar with flylady.net. Yeah. Room by room.
Room by room. So you learn how to clean up your garden. I kind of clean up my garden the same way. And then I clean up the cut flower gardens, because I know I'm not going to have a bunch of perennial stuff left in there anyway.
Right.
And I just kind of move through, because, and then I go wherever the hellebores are, because I want to be able to see them bloom, and the epimediums, because they bloom early too. Not as early as the hellebores. Sometimes they overlap. It depends on the variety. So here it says, you wrote this part, so you talk about it.
The part about rampant self-sowing perennials?
Yes.
So it sounds good in theory sometimes to leave those perennials not cut back and leave the seed heads for the birds. But in theory, it's probably going to end up with a lot of weeding for you if you don't want those things to go all over. Now, if you have your prairie garden, you absolutely want to leave seed heads because you want self-sowing. But if you have like a cottage garden and you're trying to keep it from, you know, becoming a monoculture of asters, for example, you do need
Or larkspur
or goldsturm.
Yeah, I wrote in here, I see you, Rudbeckia goldsturm, because not only does it spread by underground roots, it also spreads by seeds. And guess who loves those seeds? American goldfinches. And we get American goldfinches in the winter, and they'll eat them all. And I might, if you have it in an area where there isn't a lot of water, you can get away with that. But boy, if you're like me and it's trying to always take over your garden, carefully remove those seed heads.
Now, you could, if you like, I've done this with sunflowers where I've cut down the sunflowers in the vegetable garden because I cut the whole vegetable garden down in the fall and get rid of everything. We'll talk about that later. But I've left sunflower heads, seed heads, just on the ground for birds or squirrels or whoever. Mm-hmm. Do I get sunflowers coming up all over? Not really. No.
Few. But you can pull them out. I mean, sunflowers are really easy to pull out when they're brand new. There are some other things that are not easy to pull out. And honestly, larkspur is one of those that I do spread the seeds, but I go in and edit them because my larkspur has been up since December. You know, it's been under the snow because it's about, you know, a quarter inch to half an inch tall. Mm-hmm. And it just sits there and waits by the warm soil until it's time to really grow. And I also spread some other, and that made me think about the next part you wrote about if you have flowers like peonies, phlox, or zinnias that get mildew, powdery mildew, or in the case of peonies, botrytis, you can cut back and dispose of their foliage sooner rather than later. And that's okay. But, and also So I spread more larkspur seed because I wanted that dark, dark blue larkspur. Right.
Yes.
And over time, the seed changes. It's the same thing with the zinnias. You start out with one particular type of zinnia, or five, in my case, 25 different types of zinnia. But then over time, it switches back to the single flower ugly zinnias, the weird, yes, ugly pink color that you're just like, well, that's not what I want. So somebody asked me not too long ago, do you reseed your zinnias every year? Yes. Yes, I do.
Because they don't really reseed here in the cold north.
Oh, well, here they reseed with abandon. And not the same thing with sunflowers. There's a lot of flowers like that. If you want great, big, massive sunflower heads like mammoth or Russian, whatever the other one is, you're going to have to replant those year to year because you get those other sunflowers that are kind of wild. And
now they're okay. Sunflowers sometimes will come up in the spring. And I know this, my sister, who littlest sister, has a much looser gardening style than many. They had a bunch come up and they just let them grow. And they got some pretty tall ones. They just, you know.
Were they multi-branched with smaller flowers? That's what mine usually look like.
I can't remember exactly because I'm getting old.
Okay. No, you're not. Anyway, so one of the ways that you can clean up your garden is to cut and mulch in place, cut them into 6-inch lengths and lay them down as mulch. That's a new thing to do. You can haul them to your compost pile like I do some of mine. I do both. It just depends on the area and how many small plants I have and how much stuff I want to reseed. Because if I cut and put all that stuff in place, that inhibits some of my reseeding.
Which, you know, we say that's fairly new, but I will tell you that, and this is sort of garden cleanup during the season, but the neighbor next door, I was talking to him over the fence. This is where my mom used to live, those neighbors. And he was cutting back spent daylilies, and he was just chopping them into little bits and laying them on the ground around the base.
The scapes.
He was just cutting them into little chunks and leaving them there.
Yeah, and I suspect people have always done it. It's just a thing again. You know, it's become popular
again.
What's
old is new.
And so you had said you said you were going to cut back your hellebores, which you did do.
I did.
You need to do it out front. And then I said that I need to cut back. Well, I've already done that. I cut that back and I cut back my epimediums and some of my perennial grasses. Last year, I waited too long to cut back my perennial grasses and had to cut into the new grass. And I decided this year I wasn't going to do that. And I either use those great big scissor shears to cut back my perennial grasses, or sometimes I use a Sawzall. It just depends on, you know, and it's a battery operated Sawzall.
Yeah, don't get us started on our battery operated tools, because we'll talk about that some other day. The one thing I was going to say is sometimes garden cleanup can just be overwhelming to people.
Right. And
so here's what I'd say to that. I say this about many things. Can you spend 1 hour doing it? You don't have to get the whole thing done, but can you put on your grubby jeans, go out for 1 hour, cut back what you can? You know, can you find an hour? And I did that.
I think anybody can find an hour, a couple of days a week. And if you live in a suburban area, or in a small lot, you can get it done pretty fast. And then we also talk, I don't cut back much at fall. I do cut back a little bit when I plant bulbs, but that's it. And then compost the stuff. I compost.
Yeah, put it on the compost bin. But here's the thing. So when you're cutting back all this brown stuff, if you get into composting big, which I don't get into composting big, even though I have that book of composting by Rodell that's like 3,000 pages. Because
I have one too. Yeah. Too complicated.
When you see a book about composting that's 3,000 pages, just out of general principle, you have to buy it.
Especially when you're young and just getting started.
So the problem is finding green matter to add to the brown so that you got a nice mix. So weeds like henbit and chickweed, if you have enough of it, and if it hasn't set seed, you don't want it to set seed in the compost. You'll never be rid of it. I'll never be rid of it anyway.
I was going to say, I'm going to have henbit and chickweed for the rest of my life, and that's okay because I like henbit. I think not in my garden. I don't care about it in my lawn. That's where I get a lot of it.
I don't care about it in my lawn either, in the back. The chickweed.
It's pretty.
I like the chickweed, how it stretches when you pull it, like, I don't want to come out. I don't want to come out. It stretches. And the other thing about chickweed, this is something I read a while back, but it's a winter weed, I call it, and so can get really cold. Well, it has a mechanism where like the leaf can lay over the bud to protect it in the coldest weather. Like, and that what's very sweet to think about, the plant like putting little leaf things over the buds to protect them.
Mm-hmm. Isn't nature a miracle?
Yeah, and we're still going to pull it out and put it on the compost bin.
Don't care. Yeah. Ready for the next quote?
You bet.
Every gardener knows that under the cloak of winter lies a miracle, a seed waiting to sprout, a bulb opening to the light, a bud straining to unfurl, and anticipation nurtures our dreams. And we didn't write out who said that, but thank you for saying it, whoever you were. I'm not looking it up.
I don't remember. I think you sent me that quote. We should probably look that up. We will.
Okay, well, you keep going and I'll look it up real quick.
So we're going to talk about vegetable garden cleanup. And I would like to say to all of our listeners, listen up. I'm talking to you. You should have cleaned it up last fall. End of story. There's nothing to clean up. It's just pull off some of those winter weeds like henbit and chickweed and start planting. But we know that people aren't as fastidious as we portend to be in our vegetable gardens. So the trick with a vegetable garden to keep it from becoming overwhelming, as soon as something stopped producing, yank it out. You don't have to wait until there's a frost to yank out your zucchini squash, for example, because we know it stopped producing well before that and got all moldy and, you know, a magnet for squash bugs. And so go ahead and yank it. And then in that bare space, you could plant something for the fall or you can plant a little cover crop. But the idea of the vegetable garden is just get rid of it once it stops producing.
Yep. And that means like for, I don't know if you said this because I was looking up our quote and it's by Barbara Winkler, by the way. One thing like green beans, for example, did you bring up green beans?
I heard. Yes, I did. No, I did not bring up green beans. I brought up squash.
Squash, right. So green beans, you know, they produce and once they go to seed, it's too late. So you want to pull them out before they get totally seedy and dry, unless you're collecting the seed. So.
And remember the provider green beans? I did collect a whole bunch of seed. I have enough seed for the entire neighborhood at this point.
I bet you do. And then you pulled out your plants, didn't you?
Yes. The plants went.
And you could also eat those beans too, if you wanted to, if you get really hungry, Carol.
Yes. I could soak those beans and I could cook them and make me a nice big, which reminds me, I was looking at seeds at the hardware store the other day because I don't know. There's something in our bodies as gardeners. You see a seed display, it doesn't matter where it is. And you're like over there looking at it before you even have a conscious thought of, I should go look at those seeds. There you are looking at seeds.
Imagine that.
But I saw some seeds for like a heritage black bean.
Mm-hmm.
Looked pretty good, but I didn't get them.
So people who buy Rancho Gordo beans, which are those, he promotes heirloom beans, right?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they buy them to eat them. And I'm a huge fan. A lot of those people get on the bean forum on Facebook and they plant the beans. A lot of people in California. And then they harvest them again. So they don't plant, you know, they give you a ton of beans. So you can plant them because they don't use anything on them. There's nothing to stop you from planting them. So if you want to plant your pinto beans, you can. If you feel like it, or black beans, whatever you want to do. So
you were talking about bell peppers. Now, bell peppers are kind of interesting because some people, they want their bell peppers to turn yellow and orange and red, which takes a while.
And a long while. Because that is, so we grew up eating a lot of green peppers because at that time, in the store, you found green peppers and everybody grew green bell peppers too. And all a green bell pepper is an immature pepper. And in some varieties, there are purple ones, which are just green peppers. And then you want to go from that state to a ripened pepper. But what happens, Carol?
The plant stops producing because it's trying to ripen its peppers.
And that is one of the biggest discussions I have with every garden coaching vegetable client out there. That discussion, you guys, that's free. I mean, we discuss that every time I go to talk to a vegetable gardener. And chili peppers are the same way. Although they'll give you a little more grace than the bell peppers will. The bell peppers are like, I'm out of here. And one of the ways also, like when you go to slice a bell pepper and you slice a green pepper versus a red or a yellow, you can tell how ripe they are, partly because the walls are slightly thinner too. Right. So as you're, and that's because the plant is ripening and getting ready to lay down seed. That's all annuals want to do.
Yes. That is their whole purpose in life, is to flower and produce seed in one season.
Right.
And so that's why any annual, if you keep picking off the flowers, it's like, oh, where's my flower? I got to grow another one or two or three. I'm going to outwit this gardener eventually. You know, years ago, I wrote a play on my blog. I have to find it, about a marigold that got its head cut off and then had to regrow. I should find that play, because it's, I don't mean to brag on myself, but D, it is darling.
It was cute, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to add that.
I once wrote a poem about a wasp.
That's not
that
darling.
That was back when we were creative.
Send your kid to therapy. Why are you? Never mind. Anyway. So that's vegetable garden cleanup. Now, if you did not follow our sage advice, get that sage advice. Just go clean up your vegetable garden and now, and just be done with it.
And everybody in Oklahoma, some of your herbs that normally overwinter just fine, like rosemary, I can tell you from looking at my own garden, my rosemary plants are dead. When it gets down to negative numbers, they almost always die.
Yeah.
So you can just go ahead and remove those. Don't expect them to come back and look better. And if your lavender is all dried up looking instead of looking kind of healthy, it's probably gone too. Same with your sage.
My lavender always survives. And by the way, I'm sowing some seeds for lavender. I'll tell you about that sometime. But I saw that they had ice in Dallas, horrible weather.
Yeah, so, they had ice here too, but not. That ice storm in Dallas was like the one we had in 2020. And it ran all the way through Arkansas too. Poor Arkansas.
Yeah, and down into Austin, they had snow and stuff. And so,
yeah, people died in Austin because they had wrecks. They're not used to that.
I am expecting some wailing and lamentations from our, justifiably so, from gardeners in the Dallas area and stuff, because they're going to lose a lot of stuff that they don't normally
the
lose.
The Austin garden bloggers are going to whine, which I don't blame them one bit.
Whine sounds terrible. Wailing and lamentations.
It's much nicer. I just said I whine too, so I get it. All right, next quote.
Many people, myself among them, feel better at the mere sight of a book. Jane Smiley.
I know I do. So and this week's book, I never received. I've looked all over the house. No, I received the next two they sent us, but I've never received.
That's okay. The Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook by Susan Mulvihill, which is a companion book to the one she did 2 years ago.
The Pest
which
Handbook.
I have. The Vegetable Garden Pest Handbook, All Natural Solutions. Anyway, so Susan, we know Susan. And so I sent her some questions about her book because it is a very good reference book. And so
the first
thing I said is, Susan, what possessed you to write a second book so quickly after the first book? You're talking to somebody who self-published 5 books 1 year after the other. So,
yeah.
But she said basically Cool Springs Press came back to her after the Garden Pest Handbook had come out and suggested this as a topic, so it makes a nice set of books. And so she did go ahead and send them an outline, and they accepted it, and she wrote it. She did say that the Vegetable Garden Pest Handbook, she wrote in like spring, summer, and so it was maddening to try to fit it in with all the gardening. This new one, she wrote in more in the fall, so she had a little bit more time. So, but anyway, it's very lovely. And then the next thing I asked was, what garden problem confounds you more than any other garden problem? And you know what she said?
I thought that was interesting what she said. I'm looking at it right here. This confounds a lot of people.
Blossom end rot on tomatoes. Frustrating, because we know that they need the calcium uptake in order to not have blossom end rot. And, you know, you have to regularly water the soil and that should help it. But sometimes that variety does that. And so she does say that people tout using Epsom salts or antacids. No, those aren't going to solve the problem.
Those don't work. And here we've talked about this. We've talked about blossom end rot a lot, and it's a huge problem in Oklahoma in the spring because we get a lot of rain all at once, and then the tomato plants can't uptake. And so the best thing to do is, as soon as you see it starting, pull all those off so that the plant doesn't go, oh, hey, I produced seed. And so, yeah. And yeah. Also, don't plant varieties that are particularly prone. Roma,
we're talking to you.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing I will add, so she says Epsom salts and antacids, they don't work. The other thing that people do is they bury eggshells down there. It's like, that's not going to do a doggone thing.
No, it just adds a little eggshell to your soil.
Exactly.
But people swear by it. So along the next with dog hair, human hair.
It's not going to help.
All kinds of weird dog food. I've seen it all. Just plant stuff in good soil and pull off the ones that have blossom end rot. Okay, so what next?
So I said, how would you like gardeners to use the books? And she said, you know, she gets asked questions from gardeners all over the U.S. and Canada. She has a great website. She does tons of videos. We'll link to all her stuff.
She does.
Yes. She gave me some. I linked to her for the winter sewing stuff. So she thought these easy to use references, and they are easy to use references.
They are.
And what I like most about them is they're all natural solutions. So she's not giving you like a list of pesticides chemicals to go buy. Yeah. It's not chemical warfare. It's natural. And so I think that's great. Good pictures too. Lots of good pictures. So you could ID these. And then I said, is there anything else you want to add? And I cracked up. So the third chapter covers critters in the garden. And so she has 15 commonly encountered critters. And I looked at that 15 list and it's like, okay, so she deals with birds, mostly quail. I have never had a quail wander to my garden. She lives in Spokane, Washington. Let's say that.
Spokane. Yeah. Quail. Okay. I don't have a bit of trouble with quail, but I live out in the country and things eat them. Okay. Next.
Deer, which many people have. Deer, I don't have a deer problem.
Yeah. You're too far inward. In
moose.
I don't have trouble with moose.
Okay. This moose, I don't even, but I hear they're big animals. And when they wander into your garden, there's a big animal in your garden.
I have seen them, and, they're not big. Not here. They are big. They're extremely big. And we don't have them in Oklahoma. Okay, next.
Porcupines. I don't think they're indigenous to Indiana. How about Oklahoma?
I don't know. I don't think so.
I don't either. Raccoons, yes.
Oh, hate Lord, the raccoons. Yes. I can't stand raccoons.
Gophers.
I have a story about a raccoon.
Okay.
We have a great big huge raccoon that got into our trash cans, and Bill was standing by the back door trying to think of ways to annihilate Mr. or Ms. Raccoon. And I said, you know, you could just put one of those big straps on the metal trash cans that holds down the lid, those big rubber straps.
Yeah. Yeah.
He turned and looked at me and he goes, oh yeah. So that's what we did. But he was out there just having a feast in the metal trash can.
Once they think there's food around, they're not going anywhere.
No, they're not. And then on top of that, that night before he could go find the straps and do it, the next morning we came out and the raccoon had put the lid back on the trash can for us upside down.
Wanted to save it for later. She has problems with gophers. We don't have gophers here, but we do have chipmunks.
No, we have moles and voles.
Voles and mice, of course.
Yeah.
So
bowls are hard.
She says she has way more experience with this sort of thing than she would like. And so that is very interesting. Susan is a lovely person. The other thing, she quilts a lot and she makes wall hangings and stuff. And if you've ever been on a Zoom with her, like the GardenCom conference, in the background, she's got the most beautiful tapestries that she's quilted. Does. Very talented lady. And so that is the Vegetable Garden Problem Solver Handbook by Susan Mulvihill. And it should be on your bookshelf along with the pest one if you're growing vegetables. End of story.
There you go. Ready for the next quote?
I am.
Everybody buckle in. It's long. It's called Ironing by Dorothy Aldous. The smell of ironing being done, it's very pleasant to the nose. It's not like flowers in the sun or new baked cookies laid in rows, but just as fresh and warm a whiff rises on an ironing day from little dresses starched and stiffed, waiting to go out to play.
That is very sweet.
I know. It was so sweet. And it reminded me of my childhood because my mom used to make me little dresses and starch them. And I still iron my pillowcases a lot of the time. And sometimes I even iron my dish towels for fun, just the cotton ones. And so one of my friends said, "You really iron for fun?" And I go, "I do occasionally. Like if I have a problem to solve."
You iron it out.
I iron it out. So that brings us to our dirt.
So our dirt is, we found a blog post by Dr. Jared Barnes, and he's a professor of horticulture at a university in Texas, and I didn't get the name of it. He has a great blog called Meristem, and we will link to that. But he had a post, which kind of is, we got the post after we decided on our topic, so he gave us a lot of good information. But he lives down in Texas where what to do with, like you said, stuff stays green. So should you cut it back because you have bulbs coming up? And you know, you don't want that to distract. And whereas here in the Midwest, you just cut back stuff and the bulbs, the spring flowers are pallid all on their own. You don't have to mix them in with winter stuff. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's the same as Texas. We're warmer than we used to be in the winters. It just feels that way over my gardening time. But we still get these crazy, you know, freezes that are, well, Texas normally doesn't get them quite the same. But what I'm trying to say is our winters are more similar to Texas than they once were.
Yes. And so I learned two things from his article. Number one, that with mild winters, deciding what to cut back is not easy. And he has a motto. He says, if it's green, do not clean. If it's brown, cut it down.
I thought that was cute. He also taught you about geophytes.
I do not remember in all my horticultural training ever hearing the word geophytes, which are plants that return every year from underground storage organs. And that would be anything that comes back from bulbs. I never called them geophytes before. Interesting.
You know, they may have talked about it in botany, but I took it so long ago, I don't remember.
Don't remember that at all. So I love that. No, I'm going to have to figure out how to use it in a sentence. You know, like I'll go to my sister's house and say, "Oh, your geophytes look really nice."
Okay. And then we have another piece of dirt. And we both found out that Ohio is the first state to ban the sale of Bradford pears. And this is the perfect place to put in your applause.
Yeah, I'm going to put in I will have to put in the applause.
Oh,
yes.
Please do.
I will.
Hallelujah. Okay. Now, everybody else decide to do it too, because they are terrible and they are invasive throughout a lot of the United States.
They are.
And they're ugly and they break and we hate them.
So the thing is, I mean, they have already invaded so many natural areas. But the thing I would say is, even in Indiana, there's certain plants you just cannot buy anymore for good reason, because they are invasive. Right. And so the reason that they left Bradford pears off the list is the nurseryman said, "Oh, we're going to lose a lot of money if you do that." And so Ohio said, "You got, I think it was 5 years to sell out your stock, but don't make any more. Don't grow any more."
I wish they'd just destroy them.
Yeah.
And go on, because they mix. They're terrible, and they've just become like up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and further north and east. They're just in all. You can see them in all the wooded areas.
Yes.
So, spireas are a problem like that in the UK. When you're driving along, you just see white spireas all through.
That's
in the
horrible.
Spring, and you're like, or well, early summer, and I'm like, what are those spireas? Yeah.
So
there
anyway,
certain plants you shouldn't grow.
That's the big news.
Spireas are okay here.
Yeah, that's the big news out of Ohio.
Thank you, Ohio.
So next quote: people say, "What is the sense of our small effort?" They cannot see that we must lay one brick at a time. Dorothy Day.
So that's our rabbit holes.
D, way to go down a rabbit hole. You're going to, it's going to cost you. You know that.
It is going to cost me. I already looked on Etsy and they have more. Oh my gosh. So after I started cutting back my pelargoniums, I decided to go and study a little bit on how I should really cut them back and take care of them better, because I don't take very good care of them. And you know what I discovered?
Yeah.
There's a guy online and he's on YouTube and he's part of the Pelargonium Society in Great Britain, and they call him Mr. Pelargonium because he takes them and wins awards at all the shows.
Oh my gosh.
He knows more about pelargoniums than anybody I've ever seen. And here's what I learned from him. I learned how to prune them properly if I'm trying to get that rounded shape for, you know, showing. I don't want to show, but I still bought a pruning knife, a little set of plastic pruning knives. The blades aren't plastic. So the other thing I discovered, I do not feed them enough. They need food every week. And you can either do organic natural food, a liquid feed, or you can do a chemical feed, whichever you so desire. And he said a balanced feed is fine. And that's what he feeds his every week, all year long.
You know, all year long, I can see if it's in a container, how mixing in a little fertilizer every week would make a difference. Because I'll tell you, up the greenhouse, the water that comes out of their hoses is automatically mixed with a really low level of fertilizer. Their mm-hmm. stuff always looks gorgeous. And even in the middle of July, their containers, they've got window boxes planted. And I asked her one day, I said, how often do you fertilize? And she says it's automatically pumped into the water supply. So when it's in a container, especially.
There's a lot of people who grow tomatoes in 5-gallon containers and do the same thing. They have it just in their water supply. A lot of these people who grow tomatoes for commercial eating and use. So I don't fertilize mine enough. And the other thing I learned from him was, it was really fun to watch him give them a trim in January.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And he also said, if you're trying to create a lot of blooms, use tomato fertilizer in the spring, because he goes, that'll give them more potash and then they have more blooms.
That makes sense.
So he also kept his pruning knife. He kept wiping it down with something he called Jay's fluid. I tried to find it just to see what it was. I mean, I assume it's just some of, you know, it's just to keep it from getting bacteria from one plant to
some
another.
Some people use a very, very diluted bleach solution. And I don't know what it's 10% or less bleach.
It's less. Yeah, 10%. Because, you know, I did that whole thing on cuttings. The only problem with a bleach solution is sometimes it'll mess up your pruning knife because it can cause it to rust. So some people suggest other things. Anyway, Jade's fluid made me laugh. And he also doesn't water them after he cuts them back. Oops.
And you thought you were doing a kind thing by watering them right after you cut them
back. Yeah, by watering them. No, you need to let them set for at least several days for those cuts to heal. And then you can water them, because everything's about keeping them dry. And I thought, well, that was fascinating.
The interesting thing is, this is the first year ever I had 4 pelargoniums that have pretty leaves more than anything. And I threw those in the garage. They're sitting on a cart in there, and they still look pretty good. And I thought, you know, I need to check on those, maybe give them a little bit of water. But I need to figure out when to start bringing them out. And I need to go and watch that video to see how to prune them correctly.
You need to. Yeah. And also he tells you when to bring them out, because in Great Britain, they normally leave their pelargoniums out until like December out of their greenhouses. And then they put them in an unheated greenhouse that is wrapped with bubble wrap in order to keep them warm enough, but not too warm. And mine are just in my regular greenhouse. And they also like to ventilate on nice days because, you know, airflow. So lots of info from Mr. Pelargonium. And I've only watched 3 videos.
Links galore. So... by the way, I have to see what his pruning knife looks like, because I have a grafting knife. It's just a straight bladed knife, very sharp, but that'll work.
Same idea.
So down my rabbit hole. So I have started cataloging my books and trying to cull them out, because there's too many. I mean, you can look behind me and see these aren't even the gardening books. These are other books.
I've been doing that.
So I found two more month by month books. So Everything There Is a Season, The Gardening Year by Thalassa Crusoe, and Circle of the Seasons by Edwin Way Teal, which is more of a naturalist writing. And then, so I've added those to the list. The list now stands at 40 to 41 books. I don't own all of them, but I own quite a few of them. And then I also found two.
Have you read 40 chapters?
Not yet. I'm behind on January. I've read about half. No, no. I'm only picking like 12 to read for my month-to-month reading project. So I'm almost through January on all of them. I'm getting ready to start February. So, but anyway.
It's February 6th.
I know what day it is. And February.
It's my granddaughter's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, little bit. She's three today?
She's three today.
Oh, my God.
She's coming to play after this. So, keep going.
I found two potential lost ladies of garden writing, but more on that later. One of them looks like a hoot. The book is sitting like at the very top shelf, but again, an hour a day. So I'm not trying to catalog all the books in one day. I'm just trying to say this shelf I'm taking care of today and this shelf I'm taking care of tomorrow. But in the meantime, I'm doing cross stitch. You know, there's videos for everything. So I was looking for a video on how to make French knots because mine fail miserably. Yeah, making the motion for the French knot. This is not a needlework podcast, we swear. But I found Priscilla and Chelsea, the Real Housewives of Cross Stitch. These two gals are hilarious. But I'm listening to they have a YouTube video and they mentioned flower pillows on Proven Winners. And I thought, Proven Winners has cross stitch patterns?
Well, apparently so.
No, they don't. Flower pillow is everything you need to grow gorgeous container flowers. So you get a pre-assembled 6-inch by 4-inch flower-filled pillow, perfectly sized to fit in your 12 to 14 inch container, hanging basket, or window box. And you get everything to plant it.
Good grief.
So I think they were talking I think they know their way around a garden too. So that was kind of fun. All roads lead back to gardening, Dee. All roads lead back
all
to gardening.
Roads. Yep, they sure do. Oh, and speaking of my granddaughter and her birthday today.
Yes.
She saw my puzzle that was put together, and all things lead back to gardening. She saw my puzzle that I finished of that garden, of the kitchen garden or the cottage garden. And she goes, Gigi, I need to do this. And I said, you need to do what? And she goes, I need a puzzle. And I said, okay. And she goes, I need a garden puzzle. And I said, well, that one's kind of complicated. She's only three. And she goes, and she put her little hands together and she goes, I need a small one.
It's so good.
So guess what happened?
Yeah.
I went on the Big A and ordered her a small one.
Small garden.
And it is a garden. It's a garden puzzle.
So do you have to give it to her today?
No, I don't have it yet. We're actually celebrating her this weekend.
I was going to say, we definitely have to have a picture of that little puzzle when she's done with it.
With her doing it.
Yes.
Let's do that. That would be fun.
So before we do our garden commissions, we haven't really had a minute with Masha. And I'm sure our listeners are like, where's the minute with Masha? Where's the minute with Masha? Dee's leaning back. Where's Masha?
Uh-oh. Well, I heard Masha just a minute ago eating her food.
Uh-oh.
What do I say about Masha this week? Masha started eating my plants. And then she started to throw up. So I had to move a bunch of my plants where she can't get to them. And now we're working on the squirt bottle method of water, where you squirt her with water when she gets close to plants. That's not working yet because Masha is a very stubborn little individual. But, you know, that's Masha. She's looking beautiful. In fact, after church yesterday, my priest gave me a hug and he said, that is the most beautiful cat I've ever seen in my life. Because Masha regularly is featured on my stories.
Don't get Easter lilies this year because those are poisonous to cats. Like, take them to the vet right away if they eat a leaf. So don't get them.
I will not get an Easter lily. I promise. And how are they with monsteras?
You know,
she loves my Monstera. She's looking out the window. She heard her name.
I don't know. I had to write an article about types of lilies for that family handyman. And that's how I'm all up to speed on Easter lilies.
Well, aren't all lilies poisonous if they're in the lilium species?
Yes, but those are more poisonous than most, I think.
Oh, well, there
and
you
people
go.
Put them inside. The and people put them inside. There's the cat. Anyway, so what are, besides spraying the cat with water and spraying neem oil and all that stuff, what are you doing in your garden this week?
I am spraying neem oil on all of my plants that have scale, which is disgusting. And then I'm going to plant some hollyhock seeds so I can transplant them outside later. And it's a little early, and that's what my reel is about today. And I'm going to try to get first year flowers, because remember I bought that special hollyhock that has yellow, peachy yellow blooms. And I'm going over to Etsy right after we get off before Little Bit gets here, and order myself some variegated pelargoniums.
So Dee, send me the link to Etsy pelargoniums that you order, because I've added 3 new affiliates this week. So if people purchase from our link to True Leaf Market or Etsy or Territorial Seeds, in addition to Botanical Interest and Farmers Defense, all of them will give us a small commission, and it helps to support the podcast. Now, you want to hear about my garden?
Right, because the podcast is expensive. Yes, go ahead.
So my microgreen experiment with the planting pads is ongoing. And I looked this morning, and even after just a day, the basic salad mix that I use, they're already starting to pop open a little bit.
Huh, cool. Guess who eats mine?
Masha.
Masha. Yeah, I have yet to have a single microgreen. She especially likes the basil ones.
And that is nice. But the basil is one of the slowest growing microgreens I've got.
It is extremely slow. And the minute they get this tall, which is about half an inch, Masha eats them. So they need to go out in the greenhouse.
So I'm going to cut back more stuff this week, an hour a day, because the weather's going to be pretty nice. And then I have to confess, Dee, that on February the 1st, Lego came out with 2 more kits in their botanical collection series. Wildflower bouquet, which looks very nice, and dried flower centerpiece. Both kits are sitting on my kitchen table for me to put together, because, you know, once you're in, you're in. So I was texting with my oldest sister, who has a grandson who's, I think he's 8. Anyway, he loves Lego, and she likes that dried flower centerpiece because it is a fall theme, and she hosts Thanksgiving. So she said she might get that one to put together with her grandkids, and then it would be nice at Thanksgiving. It's really pretty. It's really, really nice.
Oh, I think all of their botanical kits are really pretty. I'm not kidding. And they're a puzzle, which, you know how much I love puzzles.
Yes. So I did put together a puzzle last week. It was only 500 pieces, but it was round. It was pretty. It was fun.
I like 500 piece ones because, you know what? They don't take over your life.
That is true. That is true. So that is it for this week. We did this via Zoom today, so we have no idea how much time we've spent. But Dee, I have a big idea. Since we did this via Zoom, we might have a YouTube video.
We might, because I actually took a shower and did my hair today. And you look like you took a shower too. Go us.
So with that, we'll see. If we do, I'll put a link in the newsletter. Thank you for listening to The Garden Angelist. I hope you've hit that subscribe button so you don't miss a single episode. We publish every week on Wednesdays at 12 a.m. Eastern Time.
If you listen to Apple Podcasts, we'd love a 5-star review. Thank you to everyone who's already given us one. That helps us get noticed by others and moves us up in the algorithm. Could you also share our podcast with your friends? Word of mouth is still the best way to get the word out there.
And be sure and check out our show notes for links for more information about today's topics, plus links to our own websites.
And don't forget to subscribe to our Substack newsletter, which is free. The Garden Angelist at Substack.com, also linked to in our show notes.
And if you want to help support us, use those affiliate links. If you buy something after clicking through on them, we're in a small commission. It costs you nothing.
And as always, it was lovely to chat with all of you over the garden gate. Bye until next week.
Bye, everybody.